experience the evolution of action motorsports coverage. The motorsports you care about. Cutting edge, high impact, no filler. This is the Down and Dirty Show, fueled by Speed Energy Drink. And here is the man bringing it all to you, Jimmy Beaver.
Good morning, and welcome to the Down and Dirty Radio Show, fueled by Speed Energy Drink. I'm your host, Jim Beaver, and we've got a slam-packed show today. First off, calling in here in a minute or so is Sal Fish. I mean, the guy who created an industry. I mean, you know, the Baja 500, the Baja 1000. You know, you think about all these off-road companies that are in business today. I mean, you know, in a roundabout way, they're all due to Sal Fish's vision. And, you know, I've been able to interview some of the greats in motorsports. I mean, you know, Travis Pastrana, Ken Block. I mean, we're talking action motorsports, you know, Olympians and Nick Baumgartner last week, you name it. I mean, we've had some amazing people on this show. Scott Speed, who's raced in Formula One. But, you know, to me, I mean, you know, it just takes my breath away here in a minute that I'm going to get to interview Sal Fish, who to me is just an absolute icon of motorsports. And, you know, just very lucky to be given this opportunity. And, you know, and we'll see how things go. And it looks like we've got Sal calling in right now. Let's see if we can pick him up. All right, I'd like to welcome our very special guest, Sal Fish, to the line. How's everything going, Sal?
Great, Jim. Pleasure talking to you and your listeners.
Well, you know, first off, I mean, you know, we've got a lot to talk about today, but, you know, 6 months now, how's retired life treating you?
Well, you know, it's spectacular, to be honest with you. And, you know, I'm not really familiar or do I care for the term retired because it just, you know, sounds like something you do just before you're getting ready to pass on. But it's been exciting as can be, you know. After doing something for basically 40 years, you know, you just don't wake up one day and stop. You know, it's it took a couple of strong, hard months with myself and my nephew Paul to close down the office and store and pack away all of the memorabilia and correspondence and photographs and stuff of 40 years of Score off-road racing. So that was kind of a fun thing, a heartbreaking thing in a way, because there was a lot of stuff that I hadn't looked at in a number of years. And some of the stuff was, you know, with your grandfather, Marion Beaver, and your dad, Dan Beaver, and Dottie Randall and Duke, her husband, you know, from the Chamber of Commerce at Parker, with the tribes, just a lot of things that I had photographs and great memories of things when we put on the race with Mickey and I in Parker. You know, it was just, and that's just one of, a million things that I ran across. So it's taken, you know, as I said, a couple of months just to get things, you know, shut down at the office. You know, you got to change your email address, your bank accounts, all that kind of crap. But no one tells you that. You know, you don't understand that. So you learn that just by trial and tribulations. But the last couple of months have been really very, very great for me. I had an opportunity to go down to the Score Baja 500. I was a guest as a grand marshal, and that was a lot of fun to do it from that side of the stage, so to speak. And I certainly have not had any downtime. I'm just busy as can be, enjoying life.
Well, and speaking of the Baja 500, I mean, you know, you've been doing it for so many years that, you know, this is the first time. How was it actually going to a race and really not having any obligations? I mean, granted, you're the Grand Marshal, but, you know, you were able to actually take in, you know, the race at Baja probably, you know, as a spectator for the first time ever.
Well, that's true, to be honest with you. And, you know, there was there was bittersweet stuff there. You know, I mean, it was very gratifying because the people of Baja have been so nice to me over the years. And, you know, so I was very welcomed and I felt honored, you know, to be there under those circumstances. It was nice to talk to the racers with a different kind of attitude from the standpoint, you know, they were not yelling at me about something or asking questions that I, you know, was in the spot trying to figure out what the heck really was going on. Because, you know, putting on an event in Mexico is pretty awesome. You know, even though I've done it for so long, it's still, each race was almost like a new race, you know, because you're dealing in a foreign country. And it's pretty serious stuff down there. So it was fun. I really, really enjoyed it. It was great to to be there, and you know, I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do it.
Well, you know, and let's kind of go back to the start. I mean, you know, you're a young guy, and everybody knows the story, magazine editor. You know, how was it, you know, your first, you know, what was your first impression of off-road racing?
Well, to be quite honest, it was greater than a drug. I mean, I just fell in love with it when I was invited. You know, at that time, I think I was the publisher of Clarkcraft magazine with Peterson, and I was invited down by the Ravel Model Car Company. Actually, they built not only model cars, but you know, games and airplanes, anything that model cars were model business. Excuse me, back in those days, this was back in the '60s, and I was invited to go down in the Ravel kit car and drive as a co-driver, actually, with the then owner of the company, and I did that, and it was actually my only second time into Baja. I'd been down there with my folks when I was in high school, and I just fell in love with the peninsula and the sport itself, you know, because being publisher of Clarkcraft, I was going to a lot of motorsports events, especially drag racing, because at that time it was a drag racing magazine, and I was being able to go around the country to different events, and gosh, the off-road thing was just awesome. So I really was bitten the first time I went down there, and I did not ever in my wildest dream think that I would, you know, be running the organization that was sanctioning off-road racing at that time. It's amazing how things happen, you know.
Well, you know, and how did that steamroll? I mean, you know, from going down there with a magazine into, you know, into running, you know, Score.
Well, you know, it's easy to look back and just avoid some of the real difficulty times I had, you know, doing it. You know, I was from the publisher of Clarkcraft, I was promoted to the publisher of Hot Rod, which was the number one automotive magazine in the world at that time. And so I had a very, very unbelievable job. The Peterson people, Margie and Bob Peterson, both of them are deceased now, were really lovely people to me, and they treated me almost like family. And so I had the prize job as the youngest publisher at the company, and I would travel literally all over the world looking for stories, selling advertisement for the publications and doing that kind of stuff. And then I was, you know, competing at the 500 and the 1,000 just as a hobby type thing, because, you know, I was not a gearhead, so to speak, to be honest with you. And at that time, I'd already known Mickey Thompson because we were doing stories on what Mickey was about in the publications. And we were invited by a friend of ours who has passed away also, Pepe Lamon, who was out of Mexicali and a friend of the governor at that time, to come down and talk about helping them promote the sport, because they had already asked the then promoter of the Baja races to leave the country because they weren't happy with some things that happened, and they were going to put on the races themselves. And so we went down to Mexicali. It was a very interesting trip for me with Mickey, and I really thought the reason we were going down there was I would do a couple of articles in Hot Rod magazine concerning, you know, how excited the Mexican government was and how the races were going to be, you know, handled differently and things of that nature. And on our way back from Mexicali, Mickey said, you know what? He says, why do we want them to put on the races? Why don't we start an organization and we'll do it? And I said, oh, man, you're nuts, Mickey. There's no way. I said, I'm not, you know, I'm happy as can be. I'm not a race promoter, you know. Well, he bugged me for almost a year. I'd see him at Daytona. I'd see him at Indy. I'd see him at Bonneville. I'd see him at different drag races. And he said, listen, I'm starting this company, and I want you to be the president. I'm going to give you 49% of it. And that's what he said. And so he took me to Parker, actually, because he had a home up on the river there, and he knew your folks very well. And he introduced me to your folks, said, hey, you know, I'm trying to hire this guy because we're going to put on the sport of off-road racing and take it to the next level. And it was just crazy. And all of a sudden, you know, I started to look at this thing and say, God, yeah, I got a great job, but this would be kind of my deal, you know, and all this stuff. And I left Peterson and went to work. I used to wear a suit and a tie every day to with Peterson and travel first class. We had 11 branch offices. It was crazy, you know. I mean, anything you wanted. It was over the top. And I went to work at Mickey, and I went to his shop in Anaheim, and, you know, you would eat off the Roach coach, and it was a totally different experience. And Mickey and I, God love him, we were the best of friends. He was an incredible individual, but we were like water and oil, to be honest with you. My personality was a lot different than his, and about after 6-7 months, I said, Mickey, you know, you hired me to run this thing, and I can't do it under your shadow. It's just, you're just, you know, you're too big of a person. Nothing's ever right, and you're a workaholic, and I am too, but you're really a workaholic. And so he said, oh, well, I got to leave for Italy. I'm going to buy a shock company. You can move out, and you won't last 6 months. Well, I did move out because I was driving almost an hour and a half to get to the office every morning, and it was just difficult. So I moved the office closer to my home, actually only 25 minutes away instead of an hour and a half. And, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately for me, you know, I bought Mickey out before he and his wife were murdered, you know, which is a tragic situation. But we remained friends the whole time. You know, he never came to my office. I disqualified him, as you might know, twice from one of his own events, because he was 51% owner and I was 49%, and one of them was the Parker 400. I DQ'd him, but I paid him every 2 weeks, and he'd call every day and tell me how screwed up I was and how come I didn't do this and that. But it was a good relationship. He was a great guy. I learned an awful lot from him, and he was a very unique person. But it was not easy. The beginning, right up to the end, I took it very, very seriously. It was my life. You know, I worked it 7 days a week. Every day of my life was dedicated to off-road racing and SCORE. And, you know, I worked hard at it. And I think we created an industry. And I'm excited about what happened in the time from Mickey's hiring me to the time that I actually took it over from him, and to the last day that I, you know, at the 1,000, you know, it was quite an experience.
Well, you know, in talking about creating an industry, you know, I look at it, and, you know, and here I've got this radio show, you know, I've got a trophy truck. I mean, you've got, you know, tire manufacturers, King Shocks, I mean, Mastercraft Seats, and really, you know, none of these companies without SCORE and what you guys did, you know, would be around. And, you know, I mean, did you ever, you know, when you got into this, realize the growth and explosion that, you know, that would happen with a sport?
Well, Jim, to be honest with you, you know, it was, I know Mickey did. Mickey saw, he had this incredible foresight to see that what was happening. You know, think about the 60s and the 70s, you know, the muscle car, the pickup truck, you know, coming into existence, that whole attitude in Detroit. And he saw a need for something different than Indy-type racing and SCCA and drag racing. He saw the future. He really did. I don't think Mickey was a unique individual. He knew how to, when you look at how many companies he started and owned, he knew how to pick people he would be the guy that would start it up, but then he would either hand it over, so to speak, to someone that would take it to the next level. And I think he had enough confidence in me because of what I had already been doing at Peterson Publishing Company, you know, knowing all of the advertisers and manufacturers. And I did see the potential, because part of my career at Peterson was going out to all the different race shops and seeing what they were doing, and coming back, and I'd tell the editors and photographers at Peterson, hey, we ought to go do a thing. This guy's making a widget that's going to change drag racing or NASCAR or whatever. So I applied that same philosophy to SCORE, and, you know, when you think about it, truly there was some guys manufacturing just specialty things for, quote, off-roading, because it was so new. It was not, there was nothing going on. It was just a bunch of rebels going down to Baja, so to speak, or the Mint, you know, in Nevada, and to Parker, and doing their thing. And, you know, I think you can remember, you know, you look at, they were calling them dune buggies, you know, and everyone was seeing these plumbing nightmares of guys that were building these ridiculous things. And Mickey had safety always in mind, you know, and I did too. So we, you know, when we came up with the idea of Nets, God, there was a revolution. Everybody wanted to boycott us. There was no way. Why would we want to put Nets on? And everything we did, you know, was a pioneering. And you know what happens to pioneers? You normally get eaten at the pass. But we didn't let anybody eat us up. We, you know, really, really persisted because we, I believed in it. Mickey believed in it. And I'm proud, you know, of the fact, just like you said, Jim, there's no question in my mind that SCORE developed, you know, a little cottage industry into a multi-billion dollar industry. There's people that are making, you know, literally their livelihood and a very good livelihood off of the idea that Mickey, you know, had and let me pursue in making off-roading what it is today.
Well, and, you know, in talking about the growth, I mean, you know, SCORE spawned, I mean, you know, all these personalities. I mean, you know, Rod Hall, Walker Evans, Ivan Stewart, you know, Robbie Gordon, you know, and the list goes on. And, you know, and here comes the early 90s and the technology's growing. And you had the idea to create this trophy truck class and take these guys from all these different classes and put them into one. I mean, you know, how did the trophy truck class come about? And, you know, and, you know, I mean, geez, I mean, you know, now it looks like, you know, it was just, you know, it was an easy idea. But, you know, at the time, I mean, it was really a revolutionary concept.
Yes, it was, Jim. You know, yeah, in fact, I can remember exactly how it came about. You know, we were the first organization. I came up with the idea that we needed to get the automotive manufacturers to sit down in one room and talk about the future of our sport and how we could help this new and evolving situation of SUVs and pickup trucks. We thought we were the only avenue in motorsports that could showcase trucks and SUVs, because everyone else, you know, it was Indy, which, you know, let's face it, is so far removed from really what we think, you know, of the automobile. But NASCAR had its foot in the ground, but it was, you know, sedans. And so I suggested that we invite, because my previous background at Peterson, I knew all the presidents or general managers or tech directors or whoever there might be, engineers at the major automotive manufacturers. And Michael Gaughan, then at the Gold Coast, on the Gold Coast, was, you know, was racing with us and his sons. And I asked him if he could help me host at his hotel in Las Vegas. I figured that'd be an easy place for everybody to come to, the first time to bring all the manufacturers together. And that's what I did. We had every manufacturer from Jeep, you know, to Chrysler, to Ford, to Chevy, to Dodge, to Toyota, I think, at that time. I'm not sure. Yeah, Toyota. And we sat down and just had an informal meeting and talked about, you know, what Mickey and my idea about the sport was and how we wanted to give an opportunity for them to showcase their vehicles, and we'd like to come up with a couple of truck classes other than what we had was Class 8, you know, which Walker Evans and Parnelli and those guys and Mickey, you know, they're all very prominent in those classes and stuff. And they loved the idea, and we had another meeting about 2 months later, and I came up with the idea of the SCORE trophy truck, the name of it, and the class itself, and they all were in agreement. I'll never forget it. They said, yes, we want this to be an unlimited, no holes barred, you know, helicopters. You could do anything you wanted. The only thing we want to do is make sure that if it is a Ford, you know, vehicle, that the logo on the front is a Ford, and it had to have a drivetrain of a Ford, you know. And I said, yeah, but you really want to go that far? Yeah, this is going to be the premiere, the showcase. We want it to be, you know, whatever our engineers want to come up with. We don't want anything to hold us back. And I said, okay, that's what you want to do. Well, you know, what happened there? Toyota jumped in, everybody jumped in and just spent literally millions of dollars on wanting to grab this market. And I knew, I just said in my heart that, you know, this is going to burn out because they're going to get what they want. They'll get a win. They'll advertise it. And then they'll say, Jesus, this is too expensive. We're going to go do something else, bowling or golfing, and sponsor that. Well, it took a few years, and that's exactly what happened. It became very, very expensive, and management was starting to change back in Detroit, their whole idea of the bean counter coming in, and it wasn't racing, you know, on the weekend, and, you know, and then you'd go sell vehicles on the next, you know, Monday, because you won some kind of a race. So bottom line is we went from maybe, I think it was at our height of completely sponsored by manufacturers, maybe 10, 11, 12 trophy trucks, to them pulling out and the independent people coming in, the racers themselves. And I said, oh, my God, you know, we're going to have a real problem. We're going to end up with about two or three vehicles because it's going to be too expensive. Well, lo and behold, you know, I think the last race that I had, you know, we had maybe 38, 40 Score trophy trucks, of which I don't think one of them was factory sponsored. You know, the independent racer stepped up and said, hey, we're going to spend the money. We're going to come up with our creative thing. And they built some incredible cars. So we had an idea, but I certainly didn't think that it would get to where it is today in the Score trophy trucks. I mean, it really is incredible. And the same thing could say right now to the Class 1s, you know, what the people have done, Juleson and that group of people. My God, you know, the Class 1s were just like a Pismo Beach, you know, dune buggy. And today, you look at what they are. I mean, my God, what a piece of equipment. I'll take a Class 1 and put it next to a Formula 1 car. And let me tell you, we go left, right, you know, through fire, through rain, through mud, silt, you know. A Formula 1, if a hamburger wrapper gets on the tarmac, you know, they call the race. You know, it's crazy. So I think, you know, the industry is incredible, and the development that the individuals have done to make it what it is today is just awesome. It really is.
Well, you know, and that's what, you know, I've always loved about you and, you know, and being at the driver's meetings, you know, and everybody complaining, oh, that's too silty, there's this, there's that. You know, you were one to always say, hey, hold on, this is off-road racing, you know?
That's the truth. If you want to make left-hand turns, you know, or right-hand turns, well, you're at the wrong driver's meeting. You know, this is what it is. And, you know, that was really... I know that I'm sure that I had some critical people wanting to believe the sport should be someplace other than it was under my stewardship. But, you know, I truly believe in my heart that the sport needed to be open to anybody and everybody. I didn't want it to become so sophisticated that it was run by manufacturers, because once that happens, then you're indebted to them. No matter what kind of a guy you are, they're going to start dictating to you because they're giving you more money than they know what to do with. And all of a sudden you're almost like a lobbyist in Washington. All of a sudden, you know, you're indebted to that industry that is paying your salary. And I never wanted to become that. I want a Score to be able to, if, you know, two guys came to me and said, hey, we have a Hubmobile, can we race it? And I'd say, hey, you know what, if you could put a roll cage in it and our tech director figures out what the size should be and you could put a fuel cell in it and it's safe, I don't know why you can't. You know, I want you to come out and enjoy the adventure of what Baja and off-road racing has to do. And that has been my philosophy. And, you know, I did not, and under my stewardship, as I said, I did not want to turn it into a NASCAR or an Indy because there already is those things, you know. And Score, I think, needs to have its superstars, you know, the 20 of them or 30 of them. But what really makes up, as far as I'm concerned, the Score family are the Class 11s, the 1-2-1600s, the Score Lights, the mini pickups, all of those classes that just guys could get together with their families and their buddies and their neighbors and put together a vehicle. Because the 20 superstars, when they decide that they've had enough of what they're doing and they want to go jump out of airplanes or downhill skiing or whatever it is they're going to do in their next adventure, they go do it. And if we cater just to them, we need them. I mean, God love the Robbie Gordons and the people, because they bring an incredible exposure to our sport. But in the long haul, it's your grassroots guys, and I hate that terminology, grassroots, but it's the rank and file that makes up what Score's about. And I always wanted to treat each and every one of them, you know, the same. You know, the Class 11 guy, which, as you know, is our stock VW, hey, he pays the same entry fee as Robbie Gordon did, but I treated each of them at the start line and at the finish line with the utmost respect. To me, they were a customer, and they were making the sport what it is. So, you know, that was kind of my philosophy while I was running Score.
Well, Well, you know, and let's, you know, I look back at, you know, the races and, you know, the different, you know, the different things you've brought in. I mean, you know, obviously Parker, and then, you know, you've had Laughlin and all these different Mexico races. But the one that stands out in my mind, and it's got to stand out in your mind, the Baja 2000. You know, let's talk about that for a minute, because, I mean, you know, running the 1,000, the Peninsula Run every other year, I mean, that's a huge undertaking, but to do it for 2,000 miles, I mean, it's just, to me, it's mind-numbing.
Well, it was, you know, and the funny thing is, I'll be honest with you, I was, one morning, I got up and I was reading some travel magazines and just some different magazines and stuff, and they're all talking about how these incredible resorts and places all around the world and cruises were already sold out for the year 2000, because all these people that had money and everything were already planning. They wanted to see the sunrise in one hemisphere, and they want, and at the same time jet over to see it rise in another hemisphere when the year 2000 appears. And I was sitting there saying, God, you know what? Why don't we do something different? Let's come up with a 2,000-mile race, $200,000 purse in the year 2000. And that was like a year before the actual year 2000. And I said to myself, you know, I got to do this thing, you know. And I was, my first thing was thinking, well, we'll run down and then back. And then I said, well, that's never going to happen because, you know, you can't clear the course. We'll have head-on collisions. It just doesn't make sense. What I'll have to do is crisscross the peninsula and come up with 2,000 miles. Well, it was short. It was more like 2,000 kilometers. I think it was 1,780 miles or something like that. But my God, it was I wish I would have done it when I was 20 years younger, because it about killed me. We started off with a marking course, and you could imagine, at one point I did count, or started to count, how many staples I was using to staple the arrows, how many wood stakes. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was like a million something staples that I'd used out of the staple gun. It was just crazy. It was an adventure of all adventures. We had a hurricane while I was down there marking the course. It was really a unique experience. It was a unique event. And, you know, it's just, I know the people that raced in it were just unbelievable. They feel the same way as I do. It was an experience of a lifetime. I don't know how you'd ever come up with another event like that, you know, because just the nature of the peninsula is changing. You know, it's changed since the 2000 race. You know, there's more roads now, there's more highways, more development down there, so it's getting restricted. But it was a unique event, and I'm glad that I was able to, you know, be a part of that thing, and this was unique for our sport.
Well, and, you know, and looking back, I mean, you know, with SCORE from the start until, you know, the Baja 1000, I mean, you know, you've seen so many things change. I mean, you know, going forward, I mean, you know, let's look 10, 15 years out. I mean, what do you think is the future of off-road desert racing?
Well, you know, I like everything in the world, nothing stays the same. You know, if you live long enough, you see a lot of things change. And, I'm not going to say that sometimes change is for the better. There's some things that I think that we should have, in our lifetime, I would just as soon have the way it was, and I'm not being a little fart about it. But, you know, our technology has got us sometimes in some weird positions. You know, it's supposed to be a paperless world right now, and I think we use more paper than we ever have, you know, even though the internet and computers and all this stuff. There's just a lot of things that we've been sold that doesn't work, or it works, but it really hasn't made our life easier, you know. This, and I think the same thing is happening with our country, from the standpoint that, you know, some of the people that have run our country and are running our country look at the sport of off-roading and the activity of off-road racing, or the sport itself, and you know, are definitely not on the right target. I mean, they think by closing the desert and putting people and organized events in one location and just nuking it, and that's what they, you know, wanted to do, and they did at Parker. And one of the reasons, unfortunately, we left at the time we did, you know, we used to run on the California side and then run on the Arizona side, two loops, and then all of a sudden they decided, you know, here where we're running in California, where Patton actually trained the troops to beat Rommel, you know, in World War II, you know, and here we are, the place has already been nuked and everything has happened there, and all of a sudden they're saying, no, you can't run over there. So I think, in all honesty, our government, to some extent, you know, has not really looked at the big picture and said, Harry, you've got people that enjoy our desert, enjoy the scenery out there, enjoy recreating. Let's get these organizations, instead of putting them and fighting them against each other and putting them in one location, let's alternate. You know, every year you could run here, then let the terrain kind of get back to normal, and then we could run someplace else. And I don't know. It's just I'm going to go on a tangent here, Jim, but I feel very strong, and I have about it. We've always supported. There was no such thing as a BLM when I first started in Parker. And your father, your grandfather, I'll never forget some of the trips that he and I would go with some of these guys. He was a very outspoken individual, and, you know, he knew that area better than anyone else. He was born and raised in that community, and he could tell you about those intaglios or whatever they call them. You know, they weren't, the tribes didn't build those. Those were built by the training, the Army, our Army guys out there. There's just a lot of crazy things. So the future, I think, is it's kind of edgy right now, the way I could see things here. They're closing more of the desert. They're relying on more private landowners. I think we're going to have to adapt on the sport itself. There's the stadium racing, I think, is great. But, you know, it's not really desert racing. It's not off-road racing per se, but there's a market for it. I think we've got the promoters that are there now have got to come together a little better than they have in the past, and try to work with the government and be a little more conscious about the environment and see how we can get some of this land back so that we could continue to do what we're doing. I don't think more is better, from the standpoint that everybody out there that wants to get 20 cars should be a promoter, because I don't think that helps the cause itself. It has to be done more professionally, with the idea of safety at all times in mind and spectators in mind, and working hand in hand with the government to show that we are responsible people, that the desert people love the desert. It's no different just because there are cactus out there than looking at a waterfall at Yosemite. They're both beautiful, and we appreciate, you know, the desert, and that's what we love to do. And I think we should have our opportunity to be able to go out and recreate in it. And I think, hopefully, the sport will be able to continue to grow. I hope that Baja will continue to, you know, see the tourist value that the events bring down there, and that they're doing so much, you know, building down there now. You know, that things have changed in the last couple of years now that the economy is starting to turn around. So some of those projects that were starting up a few years back were shut down because of a lack of money and things of that nature. Now they're built, coming back up, and I hope that that doesn't cause problems, you know, in the future down there, that the growth of the Baja Peninsula becomes just an extension of San Diego and Los Angeles. The next thing you know, they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, we don't need, you know, off-roading down here. So there's going to be some, I think, tricky times ahead of us, but I think smart people will figure out how to work with the different people and make it happen.
Well, and you know, and I know, you know, talking about, you know, just your legacy, I mean, you know, there's been so many things that you've done, and you know, is there one thing you know, that stands out in your mind, you know, almost like a favorite memory that you've got from the years you spent in Baja and promoting off-road races?
Oh God, Jim.
You know what I
Oh, that you know, seriously, I know this is going to sound trite, but I really feel blessed. You know, I happened to, you know, I certainly didn't go to school to become, quote, an off-road race promoter. You know, that first of all, there's no such school. And I think that I've had a life starting really at Peterson that allowed me to meet the most just greatest people in the world, the motorsports people in the world. They're just all super. I mean, really, really great. And gave me an opportunity to do things that most people dream about, or they have a job that they work at 5 days a week and they dream about the weekend going out and doing something that I was doing every day. And I just think, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a wife that, I don't have kids, unfortunately, but, you know, my wife was tolerant and has allowed me to live this dream. And I woke up every day. It was tough, but let me tell you, very difficult job. There's no, and I never looked at it as a job, but it was really, I mean, people, you know, they see me and they say, oh, God, there's Sally shaking hands and kissing babies and getting his picture taken. But, you know, that was the front, you know, but I worked with the people that worked alongside me, the volunteers and my nephew and my secretary and, you know, all the people that helped make SCORE. And it was a lot of people, you know, I mean, I think of all the people in the Parker area that worked so hard, I mean, you know, including your family, you know, to make this happen. And, you know, it's so great that Casey came in and picked it up when he did, because he turned, you know, that race into an incredible place. And I'm sure that the community is thankful for the event, because at the time I can remember Parker was, you know, a one street with the Kofi Inn that your mom had, and there was, you know, the Corral restaurant, and it was a lonely place there until SCORE came in and, you know, filled every hotel room and motel room and restaurant. You had to stand in line at grandma's to you know, before every morning to get breakfast. I mean, you know, it was just an incredible experience. So for me, it's been a way of life. I really, really sincerely believe I was really blessed and able to get into the position that I did. I thank Mickey for having the faith in me when he did. Thank my wife for allowing me to do and be gone the way I have. Now I've got to figure out how to get out of the house, because I hope our marriage will last another. It's going to be 40 years this September, but I was gone probably 39 of the years. That's why we're still married. But, you know, it's going to be interesting at this point.
Oh, geez. Well, you know, I appreciate your time, you know, you spent on air with me, and I thank you for everything that you've done for the sport of off-road racing. I mean, the communities and lives you've touched and the businesses you've grown. I mean, from the bottom of my heart, you know, I thank you for the time and labor that you've invested into this sport and industry.
Well, thanks, Jim. And again, you know, it's people like yourself and your family, your grandfather, that, you know, made this really happen, you know, and they're the people that they didn't get any, you know, certainly we thank them along the way and everything, but it's people like that, you know, the McMillan's family, the Herbst family, you know, Segura Chevrolet, you know, Gene Sellers, I remember him, and all the things that these people did, you know, to, in the infancy, to make this sport what it is today. It wasn't just, you know, Mickey Thompson, Sal Fish. It took a lot of people to get us where we are today. And I thank, you know, everyone for that. Jim, I thank you for giving me the opportunity. I hope I didn't ramble on too much, but, you know, I really feel a very, very sentimental part of what's happening in our sport. And I'm just privileged that I had an opportunity to be a part of it.
All right. Well, thank you, Sal. And, you know, and good luck. And hopefully we'll see you out at one of the races sometime soon.
Thank you very much, Jim. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Wow, what more can I say? I mean, Sal Fish, the godfather of off-road, as he's properly named, just an amazing interview. It's one of those, it just kind of puts into perspective. I mean, this man, he's touched so many lives and done so many things for so many different people. I mean, you know, many of us owe our livelihoods to what Sal was, you know, what he and Mickey started back in the 60s. I mean, it really, you know, you look at the names that he's created and, you can even look at, you know, auto races. I mean, obviously Robbie Gordon's career, you know, wouldn't be nowhere without off-road. Jimmy Johnson, you know, Jimmy started out, you know, in off-road desert racing and short course. And, you know, and from there Chevrolet got a hold of him. And, you know, and now he's, you know, arguably the greatest NASCAR driver in the history of the sport. And, you know, there's just so many different things that, you know, if you really sit back and think about it, that Sal's been able to do and accomplish. And it's, to me, it's just mind-blowing. And, you know, and I say he's probably one of the most influential people in the history of motorsport. And I truly mean that. You know, I don't care if we're talking IndyCar racing, if we're talking NASCAR, you know, Formula One. You know what Sal's been able to accomplish, and you'll never get him to say that, You know, but he truly is. I mean, you know, the lives he's touched and the things he's done to grow grow our industry and motorsports in general is just it's second to none. It's truly truly an amazing feat. But yeah, just this very lucky to have Salfish on air, and which is really his first sit down, you know, one-on-one audio interview since his retirement. And you know, just I was very lucky to be able to get him to come on air. And thank you to Sal for taking the time to talk with me. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have Chris Leone from Global Rallycross Championship. He's going to be on air with a New Hampshire preview. We've got really the first domestic round of the Global Rallycross Championship kicking off this coming Thursday in New Hampshire at Loudoun Motor Speedway. So we're going to get kind of the inside scoop on what's going on there, and that should be after the break, so stay tuned.
Without a boat. Announcing Wakeboard Island at Blue Water Resort and Casino, where boarders can rip it up skate park style using a two-tower cable system providing a pull. At Wakeboard Island, there's no boats, no exhaust fumes, and inside the Blue Water Marina Complex, so no boat traffic for all skill levels from smooth water beginners to jumps and rails for the hardcore. Wakeboard Island, the coolest ride on the Parker Strip, adjacent to the River's Edge Cantina, and coming soon to Blue Water Resort and Casino on the Colorado River in Parker, Arizona.
Very few companies can call themselves an industry leader. Racetech Seats is one of the few. It doesn't matter if you race off-road, rally, touring cars, sprint cars, drag racing, or boats. Chances are, Racetech Seats have a seat that will keep you safe, secure, and comfortable, allowing you to concentrate on winning. Racetech Seats meet and exceed the FIA crash test standard, are HANS compatible, flame resistant, and offer full containment, meaning you can race knowing you are protected by the best. More information can be found at www.racetech-usa.com. That's www.racetech-usa.com. Racetech Seats. Our passion is keeping you safe.
Welcome back to the Down and Dirty Radio Show, fueled by Speed Energy Drink. We just got done with a one-on-one epic interview with none other than motorsports legend Sal Fish. Just a great guy, and you know, great chance to interview one of really, to, you know, in my mind, you know, when you call him the Godfather of Baja, just the Godfather of off-road, just an amazing person, and I wish him all the best in, you know, I know he doesn't like the term, but quote, retirement. But it looks like we got a caller, and it looks like it's going to be my buddy Chris Leone with the Global Rallycross Championship, so we'll see if we can get him on the line. How's everything going, Chris?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jim?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Sounds to me like you could have a little fun up in New Hampshire later the week, or later in this week, kind of up in your neck of the woods, huh?
That we are, Jim. We're going back to my home track in New Hampshire. But first of all, I got to say, I've been listening to the Sal Fish interview, and besides the fact that it's cool as heck that you're following him up with me, just hearing some of that stuff about the history of the sport, hearing about the trophy trucks, the Baja 2000. That was just an amazing interview. But, yeah, we're heading up to New Hampshire Motor Speedway Thursday, July 11th. It's going to be the second year in a row that Global Rallycross has visited my neck of the woods, and we're hoping for an incredible, incredible event, just like always.
Well, and I know, you know, there's a ton of storylines going into this. And, I mean, you know, obviously last year, you know, one of the big storylines, Travis Pastrana, you know, running the Nationwide race and running the Global Rallycross race and took a win in Global Rallycross, his only win last year in the series. I know Travis is going to be back this weekend, or this Thursday, I should say, doing double duty again, correct?
That he will be. And we'll also have Nelson Piquet Jr. back, so we'll have two drivers attempting double duty. We're going to have, I think, pound for pound, one of the best fields that we've had in Global Rallycross We have Thomas Häkkinen, who is off to the best start in Global Rallycross history, 55 points. No driver has ever broken 50 other than him in the first three races. We have the entire Subaru team coming back. We have the entire Dodge team. We have the six Oldsburgs Fords. We have, I think, one of the most skilled, one of the most talented, one of the most clutch fields that I think GRC has ever produced, and they're going to put on an incredible show.
Yeah, I think, it just, to me, it's so exciting. You know, you started out this year, and, we learned Subaru wasn't going to be running some of the overseas events and stuff like that. And you know, there was a lot of questions, but, you know, here we are, I guess, three races in, and, the field is bigger and better than ever. I mean, you know, we've got Scott Speed, former Formula One drivers. You know, obviously you've got the usual suspects, Travis Pastrana, Ken Block, Deegan, Faust. I mean, you know, the list goes on. It's, to me, it's just crazy. You know, I saw a comparison online to the Race of Champions, you know, which is in Europe every year, and it combines all these drivers from different walks of motorsports, and you know, and they run in this one-off race. But really, the Global Rallycross Championship has become the Race of Champions.
That it has, like you mentioned, Formula One with Scott and Nelson, NASCAR with Travis, what he's been doing out in the Nationwide Series, just multiple motocross guys and other guys from other sports within X Games. I think it's one of the things that makes us the most unique breed of motorsports out there. Just the fact that guys from all over decide, hey, we want to try this crazy little thing and strap into these cars with 600 horsepower that go from 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds and just battle it out up to 10 at a time on the track and winner take all.
Well, and, you know, let's talk. We had this conversation last week on air, and you know, you being, with the Global Rallycross Championship, you know, I want to get your perspective on this. But, you know, I had mentioned, and I don't know how correct it is, but, you know, it was one of those things when I get talking, sometimes I say stuff that maybe doesn't make sense. But my thinking was, okay, you know, we've had these X Games events, and X Games are so big, and these guys want a gold medal so bad that, they're really – really willing to risk everything at a gold medal, you know, which means taking themselves out, taking other drivers out. You know, it's all about the win. It's all about the gold. Well, now here we get to New Hampshire, and then, you know, obviously we've got Bristol, Atlanta, Charlotte, you know, your standard events, we've got X Games LA mixed in. But do you think something like New Hampshire, I mean, obviously everybody wants to win, but do you think maybe, the drivers kind of tone it back, maybe just a tick to go for maybe the points, because they're, everybody wants bragging rights for the win, but it's not quite, an X Games gold medal type bragging rights.
Well, I'm sure that no driver would ever tell you that they're ever dialing it back. But if you take a look at what the points championship is right now, Häkkinen's lead is over 10 points on anybody. Tanner Faust won the championship last year, has 37 points. He's 18 points, which is nearly a full race back of Häkkinen right now. So, honestly, I think there are a lot of guys who are going to be pushing as hard, if not harder, than they have all season to make up ground, to try and make sure they're in that main event, to go for that victory, and to try and close that points gap, because so far, Topi just hasn't really set a wheel wrong all year. He's been one of the fastest drivers. He's really been setting the pace. It's been an incredible difference in just sort of the way that he's been driving from one year to the next.
Well, I totally agree, and I know he's been hitting up a lot of the European rallycross races, and a lot of people are like, who is Topi? You know, where did he come from? And and I'm kind of like, well, this guy, he sat kind of in the background last year, at Oldsburgs at OMSE, and you had Tanner and Deegan just, kind of running away with things in Grunholm earlier in the year. And I think him, he kind of sat back and watched. And to me, he probably had to learn so much from Tanner and Deegan this year. And it's like this year, he took it all in and in the off season, made the right changes. And, it's been game on this year.
Absolutely. OMSC has always put out, just like any of our teams, the best equipment that they possibly have. I know you've had experience behind the wheel in one of their supercar lights cars, which will actually be debuting this weekend up at Loudon. And just like every single one of our teams, OMSC is a class organization. They put out the absolute best cars that they can, and Thomas has just done an incredible job of adapting from taking what he learned from last year and bringing it into this year. He did end last year with two top fives, so, you know, the speed has always been there, and he, Tanner, Brian, Patrick, the four guys at the main cars there, and then you have Steve Arpin and Scott Speed, and just that team has been formidable, just like any of our teams.
Well, let's talk about Supercar Lights, you know, and we've talked about them and touched on it in the past, and, you know, this really is, you know, we've been hearing this ramp up since about, you know, the 1st of January, you know, and more info surfaced and more info, and, you know, and these videos have been dropping, and, you know, we've heard about these test sessions and rumored drivers, and, you know, it's like, here's New Hampshire, and, you know, it's the debut of this new class, and, it, you know, for the Global Rallycross Championship, this has got to be a really exciting moment.
Absolutely. It's incredible whenever you can put together a development class like this that is built to ensure that driver talent is going to be the key to making sure that drivers go on. All the cars are equally prepared. They're very overbuilt. They're very durable cars. They're over 300 horsepower, naturally aspirated, so that's one of the big differences, as well as rear engine, which most of our cars are not in the supercar class. But it's a development class that's designed to make sure that the best young drivers are going to come out of it, and the next superstars of Rallycross are going to be able to drive those cars and learn the skills that they need to be successful in them.
Well, and, you know, and I know that we've heard rumor of a few drivers that have confirmed. Mitchell DeYoung, who, you know, he's dominated short course, a definite young gun. You know, I know Jeffrey Sykes is on the list, and, you know, he's got a lot of road racing background. Any other drivers that that you can confirm for the Lights race this Thursday at New Hampshire?
I know that Team Set Promotion will also be running three cars, one of which is for Yoni Wyman, who is Marcus Grönholm's protege. One of which is for Kevin Erickson, who is Andreas Erickson's son, as well as Alexander Westland. But, yeah, as you've mentioned, Mitchell is a huge name for us to have. I believe he's had 9 championships in various series over the past 6 years. Jeff was, I believe, back in our test at Lake Elsinore back in January, the very first driver to strap in the car during that session. So he's another great name to have. All of the names that are coming into the Lights class are some of the top young talents in the sport, and we're really looking forward to crowning a champion because we don't know who it's going to be. Anything goes.
Well, and I think a lot of these drivers, you know, to be honest with you, people, you know, outside of, you know, the hardcore, you know, racing enthusiasts probably have never heard of them. And I think it should be interesting. I mean, I think it's a crapshoot. If I had to pick somebody, I honestly would have no idea. And as we talked about, you know, these kids, a lot of them, you know, other than test sessions, don't have any real time in a rallycross or rally car. They're all coming from off-road road racing. And that really should make it interesting.
Absolutely, and that's part of our job, to make sure that fans get familiar with the future breed of superstar rallycross drivers, and we think that everybody who's going to be getting behind the wheel of one of our cars has a great chance of being the next superstar.
Well, let's talk a little bit about New Hampshire. I mean, you know, obviously, I know Global Rallycross. You guys have made some changes to both the tracks and the way things are run this year. You know, I know to an extent the crossover jumps out. You've added the penalty box. What can we expect from a possible course layout at New Hampshire? I mean, similar to last year or totally different?
I believe we're going to be running somewhat similar, but as I haven't actually gotten a chance to set ground on the course site, and I won't until tomorrow. I'm not going to speak too much for what our crew has put together. All we can promise is that, like any race, we're going to give the best product possible. I think New Hampshire's layout last year was one of the most interesting and challenging, and of course I'm a little biased because it's my home track and it's where I've been covering races since, you know, I was a gawky teenager, but just like any of our tracks, we're trying to provide the most interesting and most challenging layouts for our drivers and the most fun to watch for our fans as possible. So whatever you see on Thursday is going to be just the most amazing thing that we can possibly come up with.
Well, and for those people at home that they can't obviously make it out to Loudoun, you know, what obviously we've got airing on ESPN. Do we have a time slot yet?
Yes, we do. If you want to watch live, we are going to be on ESPN3.com on Thursday afternoon. ESPN3.com says 5:30 p.m., so be looking out for that. As for the television broadcast, it will be Saturday, 7:30 p.m., as you said, on ESPN. Both of those times are Eastern, by the way, and our lead-in is actually going to be SportsCenter for the TV broadcast, so that's a pretty big, important lead-in, so we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge lead-in, having SportsCenter. I'm sure, ratings will be high, and I gotta thank you for taking the time to come on air. I know it's a busy week for you with New Hampshire wrapping up, and we're only, 3 days away from seeing some cars jump around the speedway there.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Like I said, it's going to be one of the most intense, exciting events on our schedule. We're really looking forward to putting it on, and we're really looking forward to the fact that it's going to lead off a stretch of four races in the next 5 weeks. So this is the most important run of the championship, and it all starts up in New Hampshire.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you, Jim. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. That's Chris Leone, the social media manager. That's his quote title, but he does many things with the Global Rallycross Championship. I'm pretty excited about Thursday myself. It's going to be an exciting race, and really, like he said, you know, four races, 5 weeks. This is the stretch for the championship right now. I mean, we've got New Hampshire, we've got X Games LA, we've got Bristol, which is going to be an amazing event there at Bristol Motor Speedway. We've got Charlotte, we've got Atlanta. Lots of action. We'll have full coverage of the Global Rallycross Championship here on the Down and Dirty Radio Show, fueled by Speed Energy. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have Jared Tetzloff with the Fast Aid organization talking about their recent charity golf tournament, first annual, and the state of the organization, how many racers they've been helping out, and what the outlook is for the remainder of 2013 and 2014. Should be a great interview with somebody that really, you know, an industry insider on the off-road side of things, so stay tuned.
Are you ready for the revolution, the Ford revolution? Well, Parker Motor Company is bringing it to you. We're bringing you the 411-horsepower Ford Raptor, the new turbocharged 252-horsepower Ford Focus ST, and the twin-turbo 365-horsepower Ford Taurus Show. Now, that's not your grandma's Taurus. Join us at Parker Motor Company, where we like to talk cars, treat you right, and show you why we are a 9-time Ford President's Award winner. Parker Motor Company, your hometown Ford and Lincoln dealer.
Looking to have some screen printing, embroidery, or design work done? Intense Tees has you covered. Intense Tees provides the highest quality and detail for custom screen printing and embroidery services for corporations, schools, race teams, and all organizations alike. Complete line creation, including designing of an entire corporate identity, product line creation, support promotions, product packaging, exciting banners, polos, tees, sweatshirts, caps, and vinyl decals. Intense Tees is the official apparel provider for the Down and Dirty Off-Road Show. Find out more on the web at www.intensetees.com. That's www.intensetees.com. KC Highlights is the worldwide leader in off-road and auxiliary lighting since 1970. KC Highlights is all about quality. Their lights are built tough to last. Inside and out, KC has never accepted anything less than the highest quality materials and workmanship for their products. This drive for perfection has produced some of the most revolutionary products in the industry today, such as the full carbon fiber HID KC Pod, a first of its kind. For more information on the full line of KC Highlights products, like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, and visit them on the web at www.kchighlights.com.
welcome back to the Down and Dirty Radio Show, fueled by Speed Energy Drink. I'm your host, Jim Beaver, and we've had one heck of a show so far today. The legend, the icon, Sal Fish, was on air to kick off the show. We just had Chris Leone from the Global Rallycross Championship, and we've got Jared Tetzloff from Fast Aid calling in, and it looks like we've got him in the queue, so let's skip over there and find out a little bit on what's happening in the world of Fast Aid. How's everything going, Jared?
Hey, Jimmy, things are going really good. Thanks for asking. Had our golf tournament a little over a week ago, and so just kind of unwinding and finishing up from that, and haven't had any major cases come up in the last couple of months, so it's always good not to be busy when you're in our business.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's a good thing to be sitting on your hands. But let's talk a little bit about this golf tournament. I mean, you know, the first annual Fast Aid charity golf tournament, it sounds like you guys literally hit a home run with it.
It went really well. I had no idea what to expect. I've played in plenty of charity tournaments, but never took one on of coordinating it myself. And being that it was the first one for the organization and the first one I'd coordinated, I had no idea what to expect, and it could not have gone any better. We had a great turnout down at San Luis Rey Downs Golf Course down in Bonsall, California, and we're nearly sold out for golfers, sold out all the whole sponsorships, had just a ton of companies step up, and had a lot of fun, a lot of fun with a bunch of off-road guys and everything down there golfing about a week ago.
So all intents and purposes, it sounds like it went great. We're going to see a second annual Fast Aid golf tournament, from what I understand, correct?
We are. We're going to make it an annual thing, and we're hoping to make it even bigger and better next year. The funny thing is the awards dinner wasn't even done, and I had people coming up saying, you guys should do two of these every year. And I was just glad to have the first one done, so definitely one a year. We'll take a look at it with how much work it is. It's definitely worth it. Maybe even doing one in Southern California and trying to do maybe one out Arizona or Nevada way and spread it out a little bit, give some guys less travel so that they can come out and have a good time a little closer to home.
Well, and people that that aren't familiar with the organization, I know by now most people in off-road, and I know you've helped a few rally competitors as well, from what I understand. But I mean, there's nobody on the payroll at Fast Aid. It's all charity. It's all it's all basically built off donations, correct?
Yeah, 100% off of donations. We're a 501c3 recognized nonprofit organization from the IRS, and the funny thing is, I think one or two times ago when I talked to you, I told you our CPA, when we filed for the 501c3, said, you will not get approved for the 501c3 the first time because no one ever does. And I said, well, let's show them our books and show them how the money works and go from there. And she said, well, plan on about a year process with going back and forth with the lovely IRS agents at least two or three times. And within 4 months of filing, we were approved on the first try, and she said that comes down to two things: how well your books are kept and what low overhead you guys have, and how much of the money that comes in actually goes back into the cause. She said, I've never seen it before, but you guys do a great great cause. And so, yeah, nobody's on payroll. Everybody gets to balance their own race schedules and their own day jobs and families and everything else, and we just do it because, we started it for one reason, and we wanted to help other people in our off-road community, and that's why we continue to do it. So, yeah, it's well worth it, and especially when, like I say, when you get to go out to fun events, writing checks when somebody's in need is very fulfilling, personally, but it sure is nice to have something like this golf tournament or other fundraisers that we've had in the past where you can just go out, come together as a community, and recognize that we can all give back if we just give a little bit of ourselves.
Yeah, there's enough people in our industry, and we're not talking huge donations. If everybody donates a small amount, then it really keeps you guys going and in business, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And when we started nearly 4 years ago, the whole purpose was not to be reactive, but to be proactive, so that when somebody was in need of help, we weren't waiting for you know, the U.S. mail to deliver a check to somebody or waiting for a PayPal donation to come in, we wanted to ensure that there was funding on hand so that when somebody needed help within 24 hours, if they needed a hotel room to stay in to be with their family member because they got injured at a race out away from their hometown, we were able to take care of that for them. And so basically, yeah, every time we send money out, we don't really broadcast that or advertise that. That's just something I decided to do out of respect for the people that were injured that we help. We don't go out and advertise that, you know, a whole bunch about what we do. And so this enables us to, you know, put a little money back in the bank so that we know it's not if but when, you know, will be needed again. And so, yeah, there's money in the bank. And it also helps us, you know, look forward to having a little wiggle room to look at some proactive things and that we can set up as far as, you know, if somebody did want a CPR class. We already have the funding on hand to get the facility lined up and get off-road racers trained in, you know, the basic first aid and CPR. And really that's another big push that we've tried to do and we're going to ramp up again this next year is, it's just getting the word out there about what we do, not necessarily to raise money, but just in hopes that the awareness level in the off-road community, and even more so the awareness level and the PR side of things to those who are outside the off-road community, see the positive things coming out of you know, desert racing, short course racing, and rally.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, what you guys do, I mean, it's just, I know many people that, you know, have really been helped by your organization and, you know, my hat's off to you guys for continuing to fight the good fight.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I was doing some, we actually just filed, last year's, tax returns that you got to file for, to maintain our 501c3 status. And I started looking at it and in just 4 years, we've given almost $150,000 back to racers in need when they needed it to keep their houses over their heads, to get their hospital deductibles paid, you know, keep them from losing things that they need to continue providing for their family and just focus on their recovery. And when you look at, you know, helping, I think we're upwards of 40 different cases that we've done in the last 4 years. And $150,000, and all that money is because of donations that have come in. And, you know, it's something that in the midst of having to write a check or visit people in the hospital, you know, it can take an emotional wear and tear on you. But then when you look at it, those aren't just numbers. Every single dollar that goes back out to racers is helping an individual or a family in their time of need. You know, it comes down to more than just dollars and cents. It's taking care of each other. And that's why I was so happy with the golf tournament. We ended up, after all was said and done, and paid the golf course. And fortunately, there was no excessive nerfing, so we didn't have to buy any golf carts at the end of the day, even with a bunch of off-roaders tearing up the golf course. We ended up raising over $12,000 in just one day. So aside from a lot of fun and just a ton of companies stepping up, we've got that money back in the bank account and ready to go. I know if God forbid something would come up that it needed.
That's just an amazing amount of money. That's very cool. And like you said, you get that many racers, race car drivers on a golf course and golf carts. It amazes me that none of those golf carts were damaged. That's to be honest with you, that's a miracle in itself.
Well, that's exactly what I said. But fortunately, I think some of the racers that came out might have brought a crew member or two that did some roadside repairs. So maybe the golf carts, even though they may have been damaged, they probably got fixed better than they would have been than when they tipped them out. So, yeah, it was a great day, and we're definitely looking forward to doing it bigger and better next year. We had I can't tell you how many sponsors that came up to me that said, yeah, we wish we would have signed on earlier so that we could have done more. And so I anticipate we may need two tournaments next year just to give everybody a chance to get involved, because we had all the whole sponsorships sold out 3 or 4 weeks before the tournament was even set to happen. And so that was just amazing in and of itself. All the different companies that stepped up in different ways, not only for whole sponsorships, but product donations and silent auction donations. It was really amazing. I was sitting down writing a press release last night for it, and I started trying to come up with all the different companies, and I thought, there's no way I can remember everybody just because of the huge response that we had. So we're looking forward to doing it again next year. It was a little warm. We had a little power outage there during the awards ceremony, which made it interesting, but fortunately, being racers, you figure out how to adapt and overcome, and even with the power outage and the high temperatures, 100% of the people said, well, let us know about next year because we're coming back. So we'll schedule it for, maybe a little cooler time of year and, try and get even more prizes and maybe even raise a little bit more money next year and figure out what we'll do. But, yeah, it was just fantastic.
Awesome. Well, and talking about something completely unrelated, but let's talk real quick on your day job, Woodward Thread Locker. How's everything going on that end? I know, obviously you guys are a newer company and, just getting your wheels rolling. Just a phenomenal product, but how's things been on that end?
You know, things have been going really good. We just relaunched the company in March, and so I've been just busier than I'll get out trying to, you started a radio show a few years back from scratch, and starting anything from scratch is a tremendous amount of work, but it's also tremendously rewarding. And matter of fact, I'm sitting in the warehouse right now finishing stuff up before I head out of town for another race and to do some sales. And I'm very fortunate that the owners of the company are big supporters of FastAid and allow me to take 10 out of my day job to do Fast Aid stuff. We've got the line of thread lockers that we've started selling and marketing. It's all made in the U.S. It's an off-road owned small business out of California. And like I said, the thread lockers, we've taken it out since March and started letting guys try it. We've had some just huge companies in our off-road world that have tested it, tried it, and said, this stuff really is as good as you say. As a matter of fact, it's better than the other brands we were using. Companies like King Shocks, Jamar, Patton Racing Engines, Camber, the list just goes on. So in a matter of 4 or 5 months, there's so many who's who, I guess, in the industry that have tried it and stand behind it. A lot of different race teams are using it as well. So now, our big goal is to get it in the hands of the one and two car race teams. And so we've got about 10 or 15 different retailers that are carrying it throughout the Southwest, and you can buy it online as well. More info about it is found on our website at woodwardraceproducts.com. And if you're any way connected to me on Facebook, you've probably seen it 100 times in your newsfeed as we're trying to get the word out about the product. It's going really well. We're getting ready to ramp up. We've got some different size bottles that people can buy depending on their usage. And it's great to be working for a company that supports FastAid, lets me do the racing and the charitable work. And when I go to races, it's no longer vacation time, it's work. So there's goods and bads with that, but I'm just tickled pink with how things are going.
That's great. Yeah, like you said, starting something up, it's all about getting the word out. And I think, the reviews and feedback I've heard on the product have been nothing but great. I think, from what I understand, the product sells itself. It's just getting people to try it. So we'll definitely keep tabs on that for you. And appreciate you taking the time to come on air and update us on the golf tournament. It sounds like, everything's full steam ahead with FastAid.
Yeah, absolutely. We're full steam ahead and looking forward to the rest of this year. Like I said, doing things to get the word out, just have a higher awareness and of what we can do to give back, not just as FastAid. There's a lot of other good organizations as well. And that's why part of FastAid's budget, we give to other off-road related nonprofits, because we understand we're all part of the larger off-road community. And if we can inspire people to donate, whether it's to us or land use organizations or whatever, just understanding that we're all in this together, and if we work together and work to give back, we can continue to grow the sport and the positive reputation that it has. So we're real excited about it, and just keep on pushing on and try and pay the bills on one hand and try and keep other people's bills paid on the fast aid side. So, yeah, appreciate you having me on, Jimmy, and glad things are going so well on the Down and Dirty Radio Show.
Well, thank you, and more info at www.fast-aid.org, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You can go on the website, and that's updated periodically. You can also follow us on Facebook. Those are a lot more of the social media trend of today, you know, a lot more instant updates. We did get some new T-shirt designs, and so as we get them out to retailers, we're trying to go away from selling them direct ourselves so we can focus on the exciting administrative stuff of the organization. So we're working on getting the new T-shirt designs out to some retailers, and if you're interested in a T-shirt, we will be putting information about where you can purchase the T-shirts. It's a brand-new design. We've got two of them. They've turned out really good. And if you'd like to support the cause and have a cool new shirt to wear to the races, follow us on Facebook or look for us on the website, and you'll be able to find out in the next couple weeks where to go pick those up.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jared.
Thanks, Jimmy. Have a good one.
Yep, you too.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Jared from the Fast Aid organization. And speaking of the T-shirts, I got to say, you know, they do have some phenomenal designs. They're pretty sharp. Got stuff for the men and the ladies, so the ladies aren't left out. You know, and so definitely pick one up. And I think you didn't mention, but, you know, all proceeds from the T-shirt sales go directly back into the organization. So, you know, that really is one of their main sources of income for Fast Aid is T-shirt and FlexFit hat sales. So, yeah, definitely check one out and give them a follow on Facebook. We got about 13 and a half minutes left in the show, and we've got lots of news, a little bit of motocross and ERC coverage, and we'll see if we can bang through these updates in a hurry. But lots of cool stuff happening. I do want to mention first off the Nora. You know, obviously we all know them for the Mexican 1000. They just announced the Nora 500. It's officially christened the 2013 Nora Mexican 500 Rally. It's gonna be hosted over a 3-day period from Saturday, September 28th through Monday the 30th. Nora Management is joining forces with a code sanctioning body out of Mexico, probably the premier Mexican off-road racing organization. So very exciting news. The code race will be run in conjunction with it, but that race is going to be wrapped up in Mexicali on the 29th. Nora competitors are going to have a 2-day run from Mexicali to San Felipe, and then they're going to turn around and have a return trip to Ensenada for the award ceremony. So the Nora Mexican 500 is now official, and registrations are wide open right now. They opened July 4th, so opened up on the 4th of July, so you definitely want to check that out. Also wanted to mention a website, kind of a relaunch of a very cool website, offroadaction.ca. You want to go and check that out, offroadaction.ca. It's kind of a vintage and a historical off-road website, not only just covering desert racing and old-style short course, but, I mean, we're talking everything, four-wheel drives, Pikes Peak, you know, vintage rallies, even a little bit of remote control car stuff. I mean, anything vintage four-wheel drive and off-road. I mean, Jeeps, rock crawlers, desert racing, just a very cool website. It was started by a guy named Wes Kibble in Canada like 6 years ago. You know, and he formed this and grew it to is this, you know, this historical website. It's been awesome. I've been, you know, frequent of theirs for years. Recently got sold to Curtis Guys, the guy you guys know from the Desert People video series, and he's also a partner in racedesert.com. So it's definitely in great hands. You know, it's kind of going through a relaunch. They've got plans for a forum there to talk vintage off-road racing and, you know, and rally and whatnot. Just a cool website. You know, they've got a classified section now that's coming. Just a cool website. So check it out, offroadaction.ca, and let me know what you think about it. And you know, and maybe we'll see if we get somebody on here to talk vintage off-road sometime. some other big news. I know we talked about this in the past, but the Arizona Extreme Rally, September 14th in Kingman, Arizona. It's registration's wide open, and this is kind of a hybrid combining off-road and rally. Very excited. The 1800 pre-runner class is now included, the 7100 class, the 8000 class, and 8100, and they just added Jeep Speed. So if you're an off-road racer and looking to have a little fun, in between desert races, I highly suggest you bring your car out and sign up. There's going to be over 90 stage miles. It's a time trial event, so it's you against the clock. It should be exciting. It's the Arizona Extreme Short Course Rally, and it's going to be September 14th, Kingman, Arizona. You can find out more info at arizonaextremerally.com. So, gosh, we just got all kinds of news and stuff pumping right now in the world of off-road and action motorsports. Very exciting stuff going on. We also had over the weekend, European Rallycross, the FIA European Rallycross Championship. Round six in Sweden went off, and, instead of trying to explain the point system, it's complicated. It's not as cut and dry as a global rallycross. The ERC, we're going to talk we'll just talk about who actually was the winner and scored points, because they do things a little different. You get points for each of your heat races. You get points for the semifinals and then the final, and then they're all tallied and then the winner is crowned. So, technically, if you win the final, it doesn't mean you're the actual winner. But Andreas Backerud took home the win with 27 total points. Mattias Ekström took home the second place spot on the box with 23 points. And Timmy Hansen finished in third with 19 points. Some other notables. Petter Solberg down there in six. He's kind of been hit and miss in his debut of his rallycross debut this season, and I'm sure we're going to see more of him as he gets his feet wet. Patrick Sandell from Oldsburg Motorsports, another one that you that follow global rallycross would notice the name. He finished in ninth, and Teamer, I just call him Teamer because I butcher his last name, filled in for Travis Pastrana at X Games Germany. Anyways, he finished down there in 11th place. So those of you that don't follow European Rallycross, really exciting. I mean, different, totally different than Global Rallycross. I mean, same cars, but the venues are so different. And in Europe, it's I guess the series has been around longer. And Rallycross, it's really where it originated. Over there, it's... these tracks are purpose built and really there, in there permanently. And, you've got here in the States, we've got a lot more, I don't want to say semi-permanent facilities. This is really what it is, like New Hampshire. It's a permanent race facility, but they adapt it for rallycross. So it's a little bit different. I know, obviously Tanner Faust, Brian Deegan have gone, back overseas to compete over there. Liam Dorn competing both in Global Rallycross and the ERC. So it's really exciting, to see, how these drivers that we're familiar with here, fare over there in Europe. Just all in all, an exciting season happening in the ERC. Man, Lucas Oil AMA Motocross, round seven from Redbud. It's been a shootout all year long between Ryan Dungey and between Dungey and Villopoto. It's been exciting to me because it's really spiced things up a bit. Instead of just being the Villopoto or Dungey show, we've got both of these guys battling it out head to head. But 250 results from Redbud, really an iconic venue as far as motocross is concerned. Eli Tomac, Kenny Roczen taking the win with a second and a first, and Tomac finishing in second with a first and a second. Jeremy Martin finishing in third, Marvin Muskeen in fourth, and Zach Osborne rounding out your top five. Lead your 250 points. You got Roczen and Tomac both still up there in the one and two spot, 312 points to 305. They've checked out on the rest of the field and having a battle up at the top of the point standings. I honestly think this battle is going to go down to the last event later this summer. Muskeen, in the third spot with 260 points, Blake Baggett 247 in fourth, and Zach Osborne with 212 points, rounding out your top five. But the ones that you guys all want to hear about are the 450 class. And it was Ryan Villopoto once again taking the victory with two first place. James Stewart, you know, we've talked about Bubba Stewart. He just he decides to show up and bring his A game and, you know, and run away with things. I just wish we could get him to do it on a weekly basis instead of this hit and miss. But he took 2 seconds to finish out to second. Josh Grant in third with a third and a fifth. Trey Kennard finishing in fourth. And Barsha on the Honda finishing in fifth. Ryan Dungy finishing all the way back down in 11th spot. Finished 34th in the first heat and third in the second. Just a killer for him. It really gives... Man, it really gives Villopoto a wide-open points lead now. They were so close. Dungy having a great couple of races to narrow that gap, but Villopoto leading with 333 points. Dungy way back in second now with 291. Barsha in third with 249. Kennard in fourth with 200. And James Stewart, 184 points in fifth place. So, here's hoping that, you know, I don't want to wish mechanical issues on Villopoto, but, you know, it's going to be tough for Dungy to make up that gap unless Villopoto does have some mechanical issues. It's, you know, it's blown wide open in his favor at this point. So, the AMA Pro Motocross Series has taken a few weeks off before they come back. So, they got a little break. It's going to give Dungy a chance to regroup and see if he can make a run through the remaining races at Villopoto's points lead. Upcoming events, obviously we've talked about it. GRC New Hampshire, you know, the big one happening this week, Thursday, ESPN3.com. You can tune in there. And then it's going to be aired on ESPN following SportsCenter on Saturday, so you're definitely going to want to check that out. We've got Torque happening in Chicago coming up in a couple of weeks. That's going to be a big one, and you're going to have Pastrana back in action at Chicagoland. That's going to be exciting. Don't forget, you know, he you know, had a very successful first appearance in the Torque Series at Chicagoland last year. Going to be great to see him back in action. He's going to be doing double duty in the Nationwide car as well. Got Stadium Super Trucks from Toronto this weekend. It's going to be a big one, a doubleheader at Toronto, teaming up with the IndyCar Series. You're not going to want to miss that one on NBC. And then we've got Lucas Oil coming up from Glen Helen. That's the night race, the one everybody likes to watch. So you're going to want to tune into that as well and give it a follow online and keep up with those live updates. Got to thank Blue Water Resort and Casino, Speed Energy, KC Highlights, UPR. Check them out at upr.com for more information and check out the garage sale feature of their website. Racetech Seats for coming on board with the radio show. Check them out at racetech-usa.com. Just launched an all-new website. Some of the safest motorsport seating in the world coming out of the Racetech company. So you definitely want to give them a shout and check out their new website and their Facebook page. Got to thank Sal Fish first and foremost, just an absolute legend of motorsports. You know, thank him for the time that he spent on air with me today and talking, you know, just the history of off-road racing, trophy trucks, Baja, you know, just a wealth of knowledge, you know, an off-road Hall of Famer. You know, he literally, you know, one of the pioneers of motorsports in general. I mean, the things he brought to the table, you know, to help grow, you know, the sport of off-road in the United States. You know, we wouldn't be where we're at today if it wasn't for Sal Fish. So very lucky to have the opportunity to interview him. Got to thank Jared from Fast Aid for coming on air and updating us on the Fast Aid organization. Check him out at fast-aid.org for more info and to make a donation. And Chris Leone from the Global Rallycross Championship. I know he's busy up there in New Hampshire. The race is this Thursday. So thanks to him for coming on air and updating us on everything that's happening in GRC. We'll be back again next week, next Monday, with more Down and Dirty Radio Show fueled by Speed Energy. Thanks to all of you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.